If you ask the average person, what's the most important invention in history, you'd likely get a wide range of answers. Two answers I'm sure you'd hear a lot would be the wheel and the incandescent light bulb. Other possibilities might include the steam engine, the printing press, or the compass. Closer to home, for those of us in Alaska, we might go with things more critical to our day-to-day living, such as guns or the airplane. A few weeks ago, the episode on this program was about the snow machine, something of great importance to us, but maybe not so much so to those in South Texas, for example. If you were to ask kids that specific question, I'm thinking you might hear things like the cell phone or some mention of specific computer types. I'm fearful they'd start naming computer gaming systems, which is why you won't ever hear me ask them that question. One item I'd put on the list, and this both reflects some level of truth historically, as well as a personal interest of my own, is the bow and arrow. On a similar note, I might add gunpowder. Certainly, this is a debate that could go on for a very long time, with some variances in what makes that list, though there would undoubtedly be some consensus on a number of the inventions I've mentioned. One item that might get overlooked, and I dare you to think of what life across rural Alaska would be like without it, is the knife. Welcome to Bristol Bay Field Notes. I'm Terry Fuller, Education Specialist for Togiak National Wildlife Refuge. Knives are often taken for granted. We have them everywhere. They're in our kitchens, pockets, hunting packs, toolboxes, tackle boxes, workshops, snow machines, ATVs, trucks, cars, boats, and many, many more of the nooks, cracks, and crannies of our lives where we think we might need to cut something. Heck, I've even got a really nifty small one, of very good quality, masquerading as a key on my keychain. Honest, it's in the shape of a key, the size of a key, but with a high-quality blade that pops out and locks. I use it a lot to open packages. Seriously, what I said before. Imagine a life here in Bush, Alaska, without knives. Putting up fish in the summer or getting a moose into the freezer suddenly looks a lot messier and a lot more daunting, doesn't it? Maybe the reason we don't think of knives as some great discovery is that the development of knives has happened at a glacier's pace over a long period of time. It's not like when Edison brought forth the light bulb in a fairly short window of time. For as long as humans have walked this planet, we've sought out ways to make cutting things easier, something that was even far more critical, historically, during the hunter-gatherer days. Anything that had any sort of edge to separate hide and bone from meat was a fairly substantial improvement over simply pulling it apart. Different sorts of knives have been found in the most ancient of excavation sites. Early knives were often made of bone or stone, with obsidian or flint being popular early choices. Eventually, these materials gave way to metals such as bronze, copper, and iron, and then steel. Today, other materials include ceramics and titanium. Of course, you don't have to settle for modern materials like ceramic. It's a pretty common thing today that for any interest group you'd care to consider, there's likely a segment of that group that prefers traditional or historical means and methods, such as archers who prefer a longbow over a compound. I'm wired somewhat this way myself, with a fondness for older lever-action type rifles. Applying traditional interest to knives, there are companies that sell usable knives that have obsidian blades and antler handles. Most of us, however, have something, or more likely a whole lot of somethings, that are a lot more modern in design. While the number of types of knives available today are probably something like the number of stars in the sky, the vast majority fall into one of two categories. Fixed blade or folders, commonly called pocket knives, because they fold in two and fit in a pocket. You might think that pocket knives are possibly a more recent occurrence, an invention in itself to make a better knife. In fact, the ancient Romans were able to lay claim to one of the earliest iterations of a pocket knife. They invented a friction folder, a folding knife whose blade is held in place by the grip of the person holding it. It worked due to an extended tang. That's the metal part of the blade that extends back into the handle. Archaeological digs have unearthed examples of ornate friction folders with metal blades that are thousands of years old. I can't tell you what's a good knife to have and own and use. Or, rather, I can tell you that, but there are a lot of layers of subjectivity built into deciding what's a good knife. Enough so that anything I tell you is probably as much opinion as fact. To be sure, there are good knives and bad knives. Though if you really need a knife, a bad knife is still better than no knife at all. Some blade materials are better for some jobs than others. Some blade styles are better for some jobs than others. And then there's the issue of what looks good, which generally factors into what any of us buy of anything, knives included. Also, price can be an issue too. One friend of mine has a number of pocket knives, all made by a company called Benchmade. Benchmade makes high-quality knives, and their prices reflect it. For a lot of folks, there are less expensive options that probably would serve them just as well, myself included. All that to say that what's a good knife for me, even if it's based on some very solid criteria, might not be a knife you'd like or value as much. As an example of that, let's consider a specific type of fixed-blade knife, the fillet knife. I prefer a fillet knife with a fairly narrow, long blade that's pretty stiff in spine. That's what I grew up using. One of the old wooden-handled Rapalas my grandpa owned. And that's the type of fillet knife I feel most proficient with. That might not be what some of you prefer. Some prefer a shorter blade or one that has a little more give to it. That doesn't make either knife a bad knife. They might both be of very high quality. But it does illustrate that there can be complexities in trying to give advice on knife selection. So, how many knives do you own? I honestly can't say that I have an answer for that myself. I have acquired so many knives through the years, some through some purposed decision-making and others with a lot less thought. For example, one that comes to mind is a folding knife I got from Cabela's. I did not select this knife. It came as a freebie throw-in with a backpack I purchased. I didn't even know the knife was a throw-in until I found it in the box and went back and looked at the sale catalog. It's an okay knife. It's not anything special, and I've used it a handful of times over the years, but it's not one I make a conscious effort to include in my outdoor ventures. I have better knives for that. I offer that up as an example of a knife acquired but not selected. Because of such knives, I'd not be surprised to find out that I probably own more knives than I could guess. What that number would actually be, I have no idea. I'm betting some of you, maybe many of you, could say the same thing. I can tell you what my favorite knives are. My favorite knife, hands down, is a Buck 105 Pathfinder that was given to me in high school by my dad and stepmom. It's been a part of every big game animal I've ever put a knife to. At 30 plus years old, it's starting to show a bit of wear and tear, but I carry it every hunting season, and it's the knife I use to get the party started when an animal is down. I also have a really nice folding knife I bought from Cabela's in the early 1990s that I always have in my pack. I don't know who made it. Maybe it's a buck knife as well, but it was branded by Cabela's, so that's the name on it. In recent years, I've also made use of a fixed blade knife, also branded by Cabela's, that has gray and green laminated wood grips. I have two Rapala fillet knives, that one of my granddad's and a newer version, that see heavy use with fish and when butchering moose and caribou at home. I have a pocket knife, a Gerber, that's the one I most frequently carry with me when I choose an everyday carry knife. It's got a clip to make it readily accessible, and believe it or not, because it is pretty decent quality, it was a throw-in as well. I bought a Leatherman for $10 on eBay a number of years ago, and the seller threw in the Gerber for free. Frankly, I don't carry it all that often because I've always got my Leatherman Super Tool on me, and it has two knife blades on it. One other knife type I'd mention, and a style that's been gaining in popularity, is those that have replaceable blades. I have to admit, I was slow to warm up to them, even as my hunting buddies sang their praises. But now I carry them too, mainly for skinning chores on big game animals. There are a number of companies that manufacture them. Havilon was one of the first and is maybe the most recognized name. My own personal favorite is the Vital. That's the model name, made by Gerber. They are very good at what they are designed for, in my opinion. Irrespective of whatever knives you own, the next time you pull one out to use, stop and consider how much more difficult the job you're attempting would be without the knife in your hand. Do you need any more convincing about how important the development of the knife was to human history? I didn't think so. In closing, happy Marmot Day. The rest of the United States celebrates Groundhog Day. Here in Alaska, it's Marmot Day, which became official on April 18, 2009. We don't have a lot in Alaska in the way of groundhogs, but we have oodles and oodles of marmots. They are closely related. Our state decided to recognize just what we have, which I personally think was all good and proper. Whether you choose to get your weather forecasting from a groundhog or a marmot, let's be hoping that shadows are seen and winter will stay with us for a while more. For Field Notes, I'm Terry Fuller. Music from Loon Echo Lake, provided courtesy of Solitudes at www.solitudes.com.